Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Hello, everyone, from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson. This is Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio, and a big hello to everyone that's listening tonight from all around the world, Ireland, England. A big hello to Daniel Falconer. Almost spit that out wrong, from New Zealand. And we really appreciate you listening. Be sure that you go to the site and log on as a friend of the show and keeps track of all of our listeners. We really appreciate it. We've got a great guest that's going to be along in just a little bit. If you are a fan or a tourist that has had the opportunity and been lucky enough to patrol and investigate the wilds of Rocky Mountain National Park and scenic Estes Park, Colorado, our good friend Igloo Ed's going to be joining us in a little bit. We're going to find out his latest treks into the backcountry of Rocky Mountain National Park. He does it every weekend. I think the man has probably walked on every square inch in that park, but we're going to talk to him tonight. So if you're a fan of Rocky Mountain National Park, you've picked the right show to listen to. Big hello to everyone. I have to tell you, here in the western part of Indiana, we've seen nothing but rain, downpours that have been incredible. So tonight's the first night we're not having a chance of thunderstorms or extreme weather. So that's good. Well, that'll keep us. I'm sorry.
I actually miss it now.
That's the voice of Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening.
You actually miss these thunderstorms.
I'm from Kansas, so.
Well, we've been lucky enough. There has been, in the northern part of the state, there is some mild damage. When we say mild, we're in tornado country, so when we get high winds, blow off a few roofs and stuff, that's, I feel sorry for the person it happens to, but it's not nearly as intense as when we hear those tornado sirens and the big funnel clouds start floating across this state. So we've been lucky enough. Knock on wood. We haven't had much of that, but lots of rain. A big hello to Henry May. He's going to be our technical producer tonight from down in Mississippi. He'll be manning a chat room. And if you would like to talk to our guest, if you've been out to Rocky Mountain National Park and if you have a question you'd like to ask him, our number tonight is 347-855-8123, and that's the direct line right into the studios here of Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio, so we invite you to call in. Henry, as always, each week, he educates us all with the Wild World news, and I'm so anxious to find out what you have on store for us tonight, buddy.
Well, did you see here locally that you might be getting another alligator?
I did see that. In fact, that was Johnson Animal Control in Greenwood, Indiana, where regular, I shouldn't say business associates, but they get exotic animals, they call us. And they did send me, first of all, they called and said, we have an unidentified reptile. They said, it looks like an alligator, but I don't think that it is. I said, well, drop me an email. And it was a baby alligator, and I guess what I heard, Doctor, is that the owner turned up, so they found a home, because I figured for sure, fact, we would have had another alligator.
That's what I was expecting, that there would be another one there.
But you know, after 15, it doesn't much matter.
Well, that's great. At least you're there if they need you.
We're here if they need us. More than happy to help.
All right, well, there was so much animal news this week, I had to kind of clip it down into just a small amount, so let's get on with it so that we can get Igloo Ed out here and have him tell us some stories.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, well, listen to this. Young salmon released in California. The release of 16.5 million baby salmon into the Northern California waterways aimed at helping the fish recover from the population declines has been completed. The State Department of Fish and Game said that most of the smolts, S-M-O-L-T-S, were released into the San Pablo Bay. The fall run of the Chinook king salmon in the Sacramento River provides much of the food for California and the Oregon coast there.
What was the reason for the decline? Just overfishing, or did they say?
They don't report, but all over the United States there's been a decline in all of the fish. And it might just be a cycle we're in. It could be overfishing.
Yeah.
But we don't know.
Okay.
And we may never know.
Well,
all right, off
not.
To off to Wallace, Michigan. Cougars are back after a century-long extinction in the state. The Department of Natural Resources and Environment released a blurred photo of a cougar snapped by a trail camera. Cougars were native to the state of Michigan, but were last known to exist in 1906 when the last cougar was killed in the state.
Wow. Well, they're pretty elusive. I know that, in fact, we'll talk to Ed about that out in Rocky Mountain National Park. I don't think there's a huge population, but they're rarely seen. In fact, all the years that I've ever went out there, I've only ever saw one. And that was just a stroke of luck. Very elusive, very, very elusive.
The only cougar I've ever seen in the wild was south of El Paso, an area called Waco Tanks. And it was a stagecoach stop because there was the only area there for quite a ways that had water. And I just happened just a few seconds, and it was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
Well, one of the funniest pictures, and I don't know if people will see the humor in this, but there's a fantastic website, Rocky Mountain Forums, and there's a gentleman on that site named Larry. He lives in Florida. And he was way up in the mountains by himself somewhere, and he happened to look at this pile of rocks, and he realized that one of the rocks that were in this pile resembled a mountain lion head. So when he took a closer look, and he also took a photograph of it, and was a cougar was staring him down. I believe the story went, he looked away for a moment, and when he looked back, it was gone. He didn't see it again. But then there's the old story of the family that was bike riding. I don't know whether it was Colorado, California, one of these places. And they took a family portrait of themselves and with their bikes, and they get the picture back from Kmart or wherever they had it developed, and when they looked in the picture, there was a mountain lion in the brush watching the whole thing. And they had no idea that it was even around. So
that's a little scary.
That's very sobering, yes. But apparently, they weren't on its menu that day.
Okay, well, let's run off to Leesburg, Florida. Now, listen to this. This affects us all. A commercial insect farm that provided millions of crickets to theme parks, zoos, and reptile owners has been silenced by a quick-spreading virus. The Lucky Lure Cricket Farm has been forced to file for bankruptcy after a virus wiped out the cricket colonies. The virus caused a nationwide shortage of crickets, which,
really?
You know, is a staple for our pet reptiles.
Well, fishing, too.
Yes, and, yeah, a great deal of fishing.
Right. What state was that from? I'm sorry.
That's from Florida.
Oh, Florida.
Most of our, the crickets that we use here normally to feed our reptiles are Chinese crickets. They were imported because the crickets we have here locally, the black crickets, they're a little harder to digest. So we imported those Chinese crickets, and that's too bad because I know we both use them, and we talked a few weeks ago about even starting our own colonies.
You talked about starting your own colony. I never brought that up in the conversation. I'd just soon go to the pet shop.
Well, that's from the old pet shop days.
All right. They're not hard to breed. Just get them to hold still. Okay.
Okay. let's get on with this. We got to go. All right. Jackson, Mississippi. Ross Barrett Reservoir officials will not euthanize 150 Canada geese, but will instead round them up and place them in a sanctuary. Reservoir initially had planned to euthanize the geese because of complaints of the bird droppings, you know, on the piers and in the parks. And
well, you know, we're going to have a guest on here in the next few weeks. He's a retired biologist from the state of Indiana, and he was quite instrumental in bringing the Canadian goose back to this state. And the program's been quite successful.
I must add, it has been quite successful.
So I'm trying to persuade him to be on the show. I think he, in some ways, kind of fears for his life because there's a lot of people who's rather upset because their ponds and lakes have been overrun with goose, and of course the goose dung that surrounds the water, the shoreline. So we're going to have him on. It'd be fun.
Okay, well, you know, yeah, I guess, but they have to serve some purpose. They do eat the algae, the plant life, which chokes out a lot of the oxygen out of the water in the ponds. But
well,
yeah, still overall.
Yeah.
Overall.
Yeah. Well, they don't go anywhere for the winter. They stay here all winter. They don't go south like they used to. With all the retention ponds and bodies of water, they just stay here. So I don't have anything against the little guys.
No, nor I. But I guess some people do.
Yes, they do.
All right, let's run off to Ruthven, Iowa. Two white trumpeter swans are to be released today in an effort to restore the wild population of the birds. The birds were once common in the state, but by the early 30s, just 69 remained in the continental United States. The swans are the largest waterfowl in North America, some weighing up to 32 pounds, with a wingspan of 8 feet. And if you've ever seen one, it is a magnificent thing.
Saw them in Yellowstone National Park when I was a youngster. They are magnificent. They're a big bird. They're quite magnificent.
All right. Well, if you live in Aspen, Colorado, you're going to be happy about this. The crab apples won't be a forbidden fruit downtown this year because for a while the officials were considering spraying like 40 trees downtown with a chemical that keeps them from bearing fruit because it attracts the bears. The hungry bears come in to eat the crab apples. But they say the plan needs just a little more research before they do anything like that.
That would be just unfortunate for those bears to invade Aspen, Colorado.
Yeah. Yeah,
they might see some of those folks with their fancy fur coats, and of course it is breeding season right now for the bears. So, but that would be unfortunate.
Okay, well, our last story tonight, we're heading off to Juneau Beach, Florida. Gilda, the loggerhead turtle, whose right front flipper was amputated by veterinarians after being struck by a boat propeller in 2008, is making a steady recovery. In fact, she has been released back into the ocean. The researchers are tracking her with a transmitting device that's attached to her shell that records her location, depth, and water temperature.
Well, so they can keep an eye on the old doll.
Yep, Gilda, they're going to be tracking Gilda for a while.
Fantastic. Well, they'll gain a lot of information about sea turtles. So that's our Wild World news for tonight, Henry.
Yes, we got a lot more, but we need to get Ed on.
Absolutely. Very spectacular. As always, we enjoy the Wild World news and always anticipate it with great, holding our breath. And once again, you've lived up to your legend, and we appreciate it. Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World news here on Blog Talk Radio. We want to thank our underwriters. They're the ones that keep us on the air, and they help bring Larry Batson's Wild World to Blog Talk Radio. such as We Want You Cottages up in western New York. Of course, they've got that great fishing site for the youngsters called iKids Fishing. And their new television show that they're developing. In fact, this last week I had an opportunity to take a look at the DVD, and it's lots of fun. Kids teaching kids about fishing. And for all the information about that, you want to go to their website at wewantyou.com or give Peter or Kathy a call. The Weimers up there in western New York along the banks of Lake Chautauqua or Chautauqua Lake. I get that backwards. Their phone number, grab your pencil, 716-789-3383. That's We Want You Cottages, an exciting iKids Fishing, the new fishing network on the Internet, where youngsters can post and download pictures of that big whopper that they just caught and compare it to youngsters all across the country. Hey, this is great. One of our underwriters, of course, is McGregor Mountain Lodge. They're in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado, right on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park. When you're heading that way and you need a cabin or a lodge, they're the folks you want to get a hold of. I'm telling you, every time we go out, that's where we stay. And it's great because that's going to be our subject tonight, Rocky Mountain National Park. Their website is info@McGregorMountainLodge.com. Or give Michael Hodges a call at 1-800-835-8439. Big hello to Bass Pro Shops. Tracker Marine Boating Center, way down in Clarksville, Indiana, very close to Louisville, Kentucky. And I'll tell you, if you've never been to the Bass Pro Shop, it's a museum in itself. While Dad's looking at the latest fishing gear, they have these magnificent animal mounts from around the world. Fantastic aquarium where you can see native and saltwater fish. But that's the Bass Pro Shop down in Clarksville, Indiana. And also Santee Cooper Country in beautiful South Carolina, Lake Marion and Lake Moultrie, known as Santee Cooper Lakes. Folks, these lakes cover 171,000 acres and 450 miles of shoreline. They're known for world-class fishing. They hold 7 state records and 1 world record. And here's how you find out about going fishing down there. And also, you golfers, fish one day, play golf the next. Here's their website, www.SanteeCooperCountry.org, or give the girls a call at 1-800-227-8510. And if you're a fisherman, man, it's spectacular. They'll fix you up with a guide, and you can go fishing down there in beautiful South Carolina. And a big thank you to our latest underwriter, Jet Kaiser Films, cinematographer, produces fantastic videos. He does everything. So if you've got a project in mind, go to Jet Kaiser, KAISER.com. Check out his website, and he does fantastic work. So we really appreciate them climbing aboard and being one of our underwriters. He's known as the yes.
I hate to interrupt, but we do have a caller from the 210 area code.
Well, let's have him hang on here for a second. First of all, let me introduce. He's known as the Mountain Man of Rocky Mountain National Park in beautiful Colorado. The guy's a legend in that part of the country. He does the most amazing thing. He builds igloos, and they go camping in the winter in the mountains. And we're going to talk about his igloos and the equipment that he manufactures and distributes all over the country so you can build your own igloo. From his home in Longmont, Colorado, big hi to Igloo Ed. Good evening, Ed.
Good evening, Larry. How are you doing?
Well, we're doing great. We're doing fantastic. You're on the show. I mean, this is... We had such a great response the last time you were on. It was great. So I was asking you earlier so you can share with our listeners, how's the weather out there right now?
It's been wonderful here, I guess, the last 5-6 days. But before that, we had a week of rain and a week of sunshine before that, and then like about 6 weeks of snowstorms before that.
Whoa.
So we had some pretty bad weather this spring.
You guys got a good snowfall this winter, didn't you?
Yeah, it came late. It came in the spring storms.
I remember.
You know, it was kind of average all year long, a little bit low. And then in the spring here now, it just went up. I don't know what the snowpack was. I think it was like 110, 120% of average.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
It
melted fast. It's amazing how it melted. Yeah, it like all winter long it was warm, so that core of the snow was really warm.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was ready to melt. I thought it was going to melt, you know, because spring came early. Uh-huh. And it was going, and I thought it was going to be gone in a couple of weeks, and then all of a sudden it kicked in again for 6 weeks, and it stopped it from melting, and then it went all the way till the end of the third week in May or something, and then finally cleared up. So then it just melted immediately. Like, the rivers here were flooding and over their banks and everything. So it's pretty amazing.
Well, I saw one of the pictures that you had posted, and I'm pretty sure it was from Alberta Falls, which is a short little hike. I believe that's from the Glacier Gorge campground, or
yeah, Glacier Gorge, and it's probably about 0.7 miles or 0.6. And yeah, that was Alberta Falls, and I've never seen it that big. And I've been there for 30 years, you know.
Well, that's probably between the hike around the Bear Lake, that hike to Alberta Falls and Nymph Lakes, probably two of the most popular destinations for people that want to see the park on foot, I would say.
Yes, yeah, the Bear Lake area if they want to see it on foot. And, Nymph Lake and Alberta Falls are the easy ones. And then anything beyond that, it just keeps getting better and better.
Oh, it does. I mean, I know I've brought this up the last time you were on, but my wife, we took our honeymoon out there. She'd never been west of the Mississippi. And it's so, well, it's breathtaking, but I think the first things people think is that this place is so big. I mean, you look at a mountain, you realize, well, that mountain looks like it's close, but there's about 10, 15 miles of pretty tough going to get to some of these points that look like, well, that wouldn't be much to climb up there. You just go up that hill and over that hill and you're up there.
Right, right. Yeah, it's a perspective and the size of it, it's just it'll fool you real easy.
Well, you know, Ed, I brought in a surprise tonight. A good friend of yours, I invited him. I talked to him last week and I said, we'd love to have you on with our good friend Igloo Ed. And at first he said he was a little shy, which I knew better than that. But all the way from San Antonio, Texas, you might know who I'm talking about, Ed. He said, oh, no. Our good friend Bill Powers. Good evening, Bill.
Hi, guys. What's up, Ed?
I'm working out, Bill. We're going up long this fall.
Are you working? I'm working out too, but I bet they're two different things, Ed.
Well, what's Bill doing?
Burgers, they only get your arm in shape.
Oh, trust me, the right arm is in excellent shape. The 12-ounce curls are paying off.
Oh, okay. We'll take a climbing route then, so you use those arms.
Well, my guess is that you and Sandy Oakley can haul me back if I need to, so I'm not sweating it too much.
Oh, no. It's like Everest, man.
Oh, is it really?
No, yes. They don't want to take any. No, I mean, it could be a disaster for the rest of the climbing crew.
Oh, no. I'll be good. Ed's never lost anybody on a hike. That's one thing. We've had the pleasure of going with up to Camp Ed at an unnamed lake to visit the Igloo Village, and Ed takes care of the people that are with him. So I have no worries. Ed is a good trail guide for sure.
Well, you know, we haven't talked about this yet, but Ed distributes and manufactures a tool, the Icebox tool, where he actually builds igloos. And here's the concept, everybody. You head up, what do you go up in after the first really good snow, Ed?
Yeah, usually try and have one built by Thanksgiving. And some years it's pretty lacking and some years not. This year I built it the weekend before Thanksgiving.
Well, he goes up in these magnificent parts of the park where nobody goes and he builds his igloos. Of course, they get a warm spell in the middle of winter. They're there all winter, right?
They're what?
They're there all winter, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much?
Yeah. Pretty much, yes.
And now when we talk these igloos, what, some of them sleep like 8-10 people?
No, about six people is the biggest one that our tool will build one, 11-foot inside diameter.
Yeah.
And normally you sleep five in that, but if you don't dig a trench to hang your feet down into, you can sleep six adults.
But you can get 22 people inside of one, just not sleeping.
Just like a Volkswagen bus, or I guess in Europe they use the phone booth, don't they?
Right. Well, you know, the thing that's impressive, if you haven't seen one and you need to, I mean, they're awesome. But when Ed builds an igloo, he builds a village. I've been in towns that don't have the same infrastructure that Camp Ed had. It's a sight to be seen.
Well, I have to confess, of course, we don't get the snow that they get there in Colorado. But we'll get a couple blasts a year. And my neighbor, who has a couple young daughters, I told him about it. And I said, hey, we get the next big snow, you and the girls ought to build an igloo. And so I loaned him the DVD and all the steps, and he read the instructions. Well, he got it built. But I think after the fact, he says, that was a lot of work. I said, especially if you've never done it before. Ed, you make it look easy, I'm told.
Yeah, I've got a lot of experience, and I know how to look and make it look easy, too.
Go ahead.
I've got a lot of experience. I don't waste a stroke, you know, with the shovel and spinning around and stuff like that. No motion's wasted, so I cut my work effort. I barely work up a sweat in my armpits and around my collar, and that's all the sweat I work up. And we build them in an hour and 40 minutes to 2 hours and 40 minutes, an experienced team. So, you know, you're kind of sweating in your pits for an hour and 40 minutes, 2 hours, 40 minutes. That's not bad.
No.
It's a bomb-proof shelter, and well, you sleep in there solid. You know, you can't hardly hear the wind. It can be just horrendous winds, and you'll hear the wind blowing through the treetops.
Yeah.
That's it. Barely hear it.
Have you ever...
Walls are thin enough that the moon will shine through. You know,
oh, really?
A full moon. Yeah,
yeah,
full moon. You can find your gear at night without even turning your headlamp on.
So have you ever involved Mr. Powers in the construction of one of these clues? I mean, that is a video I would like to see.
Well, I plan it so I come up a day late. And when I get there, the vacancy sign is already out, and everything's constructed.
Well, you know, it's a fantastic idea. You know,
it's pretty amazing, kind of. You know, it's so simple that you'd think of somebody would have thought of it before, really. And I think that's one of the things that we fight trying to market the thing is people, well, if it works, somebody would have thought of it before. And it does work. I've done it down to 28 below Fahrenheit, and it was old snow, you know, like little BBs of ice, about 30 pound diameter. And it works. I did that up in Yellowstone.
Well, I've got my friend in Western New York, and he was on the program last week, and I suggested to him that he needs to get a hold of you because they get those big snows up there. He's about an hour and a half from Buffalo, if that tells you anything.
Yeah,
and
they get that lake effect there, you bet.
Oh, yes, and he builds these ice castles, and I said, hey, I've got something that can be quite spectacular. You know, they put the lights inside of the ice castles. I'm thinking these igloos would be fantastic, especially if the moonlight shines through them.
Yeah, you can put snow on the outside or carve in it, and when you illuminate the igloo, then you can see that, you know, whatever you've carved in the igloo and stuff like that. Make faces on it. I've done that before, just for a picture, you know.
Right. Well, we're talking tonight with Igloo Ed and our very special guest all the way from San Antonio, Texas. Bill Powers is with us tonight. Bill, can you hang around for a little bit?
Yeah, I'll hang around. I'm loving talking to you guys.
Well, we love having you on the show. We're going to take a quick break, so if anybody has to go visit the laboratory or grab another beverage, you'll have the opportunity. We'll run a few PSAs. This is Larry Batson,
You're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World. We'll be right back with Igloo Ed on Blog Talk Radio.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Pat Green. The blood supply is at critically low levels, and you can help. Call the American Red Cross at 1-800-GIVE-LIFE. That's 1-800-GIVE-LIFE. Schedule your appointment to donate blood. Your donation is critical because every 2 seconds someone in America needs blood. That's accident victims, surgical candidates, and cancer patients, just to name a few. Please donate blood and encourage your friends, family, and neighbors to give too. Please call the American Red Cross at 1-800-GIVE-LIFE or visit givelife.org to make your appointment. Thank you.
Duty, freedom, country, family. They're the values that make America strong and what our armed forces are fighting to defend. While many talk about these ideals without action, they are just empty words. If you think America's military families deserve more, log on to thanksusa.org. It's a great way to thank our troops and give military families the gift of education. Thanksusa.org. Scholarships for America's military families. You can make a difference.
Take me fishing and show me how to drive the boat.
Take me fishing so I can tell you what a great dad you've been.
Take someone you love out on the water and see where the water takes you.
Take me fishing because I miss my boy.
Rediscover the joy of boating and fishing. Get information and get going at takemefishing.org.
Hi, this is Paul McCartney on behalf of Rad. If you're drinking, you can't drive my car or any car. Remember, if you're partying this holiday season, don't drink and drive. Got it? It's just not worth it. Doesn't make sense. Thank you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg. Ha ha, I win. Whoa! Ah! Sassy! Johnny fell down the well!
I'm wet!
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl! What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold!
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound, health, and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
We're Rascal Flats. There's a place where ordinary people do extraordinary things every day. That place is called the American Red Cross. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn more.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest, near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, 1 second, I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
Hello, everybody. This is Larry Batson, Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Broadcasting from all across the country, I'm in my studios in Clinton Falls, Indiana. Of course, our technical expertise, Henry May down in Mississippi. Our guest this week from Longmont, Colorado, the legendary Igloo Ed, the mountain man of Rocky Mountain National Park, and as a special guest, good friend, and also a lover of Rocky Mountain National Park, like many of us, Bill Powers from San Antonio, Texas. We want to thank our underwriters. They keep us on the air. We Want You Cottages way up in western New York, and they've got this exciting new site called iKids Fishing. So if your youngster's a fisherman, go to that. Well, first of all, take a picture of that big fish he's caught, and then you can download it on their site and compare it to youngsters all across the country. And, of course, McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado. And if you're heading out to Rocky Mountain National Park, I mean, this is the place to stay. You're right on the edge of the park. I mean, there'll be bighorn sheep possibly in your backyard, elk across from Deer Mountain, and all the information's on their website at info@McGregorMountainLodge.com, or use their 800 number, 1-800-835-8439. Big thank you to Bass Pro Shops and the Tracker Marine Boating Center in Clarksville, Indiana. Very close to Louisville, Kentucky, and if you've never been to the Bass Pro Shops, they are absolutely spectacular. Lots of great equipment for the fisherman, the hunter, any outdoor activity, let's put it that way. And also they're fantastic display of fish and mounted animals from around the world. And also Santee Cooper Country in beautiful South Carolina, Lake Marion and Lake Moultrie. If you're a fisherman, that's where you want to go. SanteeCooperCountry.org, or give them a call, 1-800-227-8510. Let those girls that run the Santee Chamber of Commerce plan your trip, your next fishing trip, and I guarantee you, you will not be sorry. And also Jet Kaiser Films, producers of documentaries and all sorts of, they're cinematographers, folks. These Jet Kaiser's an artist. Go to his website, check out his work, JetKaiser.com. He'll travel anywhere in the world to produce your video, so be sure you do that. He does our website, and you want to be sure and check out our website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com. And also there's a direct link to the Blog Talk Radio program, and you can listen to the archives if you go to the website. And also our store with our brand new book, a children's book, Baxter the Educator's Alphabet Swamp. It's been out for about a month now. We're very excited. You can order that through our website. Or if you'd like to contribute to our wildlife education work that we do or wild animal rescue, you can do that on the website. We have the old PayPal, and we appreciate any donation, any size. It all helps. We've got lions and tigers to feed, so we hope you can help us out. Our guest this week is he's a legend in Rocky Mountain National Park. You might see him wandering around out there, but I doubt it because I don't think he walks on any trail. He follows the trail the wild animals do, the elk and the bighorn. Igloo Ed from Longmont, Colorado. Ed, how you doing, buddy?
Yeah, we're sitting here having a good time.
We are having a good time. Absolutely.
I'm feeling pretty strong this spring. I've been doing quite a bit of hiking already.
Hey,
Ed.
Go ahead. Bill Powers with us, by the way, from San Antonio, Texas.
Yeah. It's okay, I'm so sure. Hey, Ed, how many days a year do you think you spend in the park?
Oh, probably 52 times 1.5, huh? Something like that.
Oh, this is like a math test now, okay.
I think that boils down to about 79 days.
Thank you, Larry.
I am so jealous.
I make it both days, every other weekend, and you know, something like that. And then some weekends, you know, it's just one day of the weekend. And then in the winter, there's some trips that are, you know, like this winter, I did a trip there that was 6 nights long. So that, you know, kind of ups the average a little bit too, I guess. And
is that when you have to haul up all those city folks up there in your little village?
Oh, that was about a 4-night one.
Yeah.
Or three nights for me, I think. But I did a long trip. That was a buddy of mine. He came down from Minneapolis. He's really experienced with the cold and also with our icebox. And we went up and built two igloos and had a great time.
You know, the other question I was wondering, how many igloos do you think you build during a winter? Because I know you do a lot of shows, but if you put a figure on it, how many igloos do you think you build?
It's right around 20 or right below 20. And the first couple of years that we had the product, we built 50 the first year and 49 the second year.
If you haven't built one of the igloos, folks, I'm so tired listening to him. Because I have to confess that I tried to build an igloo once, but the snow was just not right. Plus, there wasn't very much. And my wife, which I've nicknamed the bipedal wolverine, she would just point and laugh. Because my goal was to build an igloo in one of her tiger enclosures. And see if the tigers...
Been pretty cool for sure.
Well,
it takes a lot of experience. Some people, you know, they buy it and they get back to us and they say, yeah, it took me 2 hours on my first one. Then other people, it's 11 hours. And I know the snow conditions have got a lot to do with it, but I also know, you know, that there's been the bad snow conditions and people have still done good. So it's it's just the individual, and I can't explain why. For years I've been trying to figure out, you know, you talk to a person and a new customer and boy, this guy is going to do great.
Yeah.
And he doesn't. And the next guy, you know, think, wow, this guy, whatever, you know, and he comes back and, whoa, this thing's great. And he had a great time. And, you know, so it's no rhyme or reason. I can't figure it out.
You know, Bill, what you should do one year just to basically make your neighbors realize that you're not really completely walking around with a full deck. You ought to somehow shift
We've established that already in this neighborhood, so.
But you ought to have somehow figure out a way to have a large amount of snow trucked in.
Well, if I can get Ed and JP to come down and lead it, I'll do that. You know, interesting story, I guess most of your listeners in San Antonio, Texas, you know, our summers are our winters. We get below 90, but above 80, so that's about it. But the guy that lives five houses up from me actually has one of Ed's boxes in his garage. Yes. I mean, he's not using it here for sure, but
right.
He was military and stationed up in Wyoming or South Dakota or some cold place, and he had bought it then. So, I mean, it's just kind of a small world, you know. And I told him, well, I know the guy's invented that. You know, and he's like, yeah, sure, right, you know. But, you know, it's caught on. I don't know, Ed could probably tell us, but it's turning into quite a successful venture, eh, Ed?
Yeah, not bad. We've got like 7,000 plus of them out there now, and we're selling them worldwide. So, but, yeah, there's quite a few in Texas, actually. It is kind of funny. They come up to Colorado, and they come up for vacations, and they just have a ball. Yeah.
Well, you know what it is. It's that Texan attitude. Well, I'm going to build me an igloo, even if I...
Yeah, even if it lasts for 30 minutes. But I tried to build them out of water, but that won't work either.
You guys got cotton down there now. I've heard that.
Yeah. Can you build a cotton glue?
And Sandy, she's got some hairspray, right?
I just came up with an idea.
Oh, no.
Run for your life.
You know, it's a bad idea because I'm laughing before I've even said anything. But let's figure out a way to build one out of Jell-O.
Dude, you've been on the farm too long, Larry.
We can make it multicolored.
What color?
Multicolored.
Oh, multi. I said lumpy colored. I don't want to see that one.
Well, people, the principle behind the igloo is it's a square box and it's on like a huge compass, and you fill the box with snow and you move around in a circle and you go up different levels, and this compass, the rod gets shorter and shorter, so you can get that beautiful globe shape. That'd take one heck of a lot of Jell-O.
Yeah, I would. It'd be cheaper to fly to Colorado.
Yeah, just build the igloo out the way it's supposed to be built.
Right.
Now,
right.
you were talking earlier. Bill is planning a big trip. Now, for the folks that may not be aware of this, you're going to go up Long's Peak. That's the highest point in Rocky Mountain National Park.
14,255 or so. 259. That's a grew 4 foot, right?
They grew 4 feet, yeah. So,
yeah.
Bill.
Well, this started. Everybody does it. I mean, there's guys twice my, kids do it. It's, I have a bit of a fear of heights, and I was expressing that, and all of a sudden, I've got, from the forums, there's 20 people that decided they were going to get Bill up the hill.
Yeah.
So, as much as I would love to chicken out of this, you can't chicken out in front of 20 other people, so, we're going into August, I guess, meeting up there, and we're going to give it a go. Of course, Ed can tell you, a lot of it depends on the weather conditions. It can go technical in just a matter of hours. That's the beauty of Rocky Mountain National Park. It can go 80 degrees one day and 20s and feet of snow the next. So we'll see. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, the point that I've always heard about is along the narrows, where supposedly there's a steel or iron stake that's been embedded in the rock that you have to grab a hold of as you look straight down to your ultimate death.
You're helping.
I'm trying to help you. And realizing
it's really working.
That the plummet would be, you would probably pass away from shock before you actually spilled into the boulders and rock.
Hey, can you make it up that weekend, Larry?
I'd love to. I would love to. Here's the problem. I would have to bring my baby baboon.
Well, the forums is bringing their baboon, so it'll work fine.
And she would do quite well. There's no doubt in my mind that monkey'd run up that mountain. But I have to explain. It literally beats the tar out of me every day. I mean, right now I've got a black eye. I look like I've been in the Rocky movie most of the time. And it's just because it's so playful. But, I'd have to take the baboon up there.
I wonder what park rules are concerning baboons.
Well, they'll probably say, well, we have millions of them every year that come through there. So. And I know her manners would be much better. She'd have a lot more common sense. A lot of these folks
Ed, can you? I think people might be interested. How you got started in this? I know you've told the story. You may not be comfortable with it, but how this all began with? I know the igloo kind of was an offshoot from you spending winters in a cave, a la Fred Flintstone.
Yeah. Well, I was raised in North Dakota, and I dug snow caves up there and as a kid, And then I moved to Colorado, started going in the mountains, and it was just a natural. I just started digging snow caves here. And then after years, snow caves sag over a week, and when you go back, you got to dig them out again. So that was a lot of work because they're all iced up from when you lived in there, and then they freeze when you're gone. And so we started building underneath rocks so the ceiling wouldn't sag. Well, we wound up building walls, and we tried all different types of techniques, and we've come up with we used to use our ridge rest pads, foam sleeping pads, and we used them for forms to build the walls with. And we realized that we could pack any kind of snow. And then it was just another step to the igloo form, igloo tool.
Wow. And you build these yourself, right?
Yeah, I build the igloos themselves, you mean? I build them by myself, yeah. The fastest I've ever built one so far is 2 hours. But that's only a little 7-footer. That's big enough for one person.
For the folks that may be planning a trip out there, and I tell anyone, you've got to go west at least once in your lifetime. If for the first timer to go to the park, and it's in I don't know, fairly good condition. I'm not talking about Bill Powers.
Thanks.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Where would you suggest, of all the adventures and places, the trails that go through that magnificent Front Range?
Well, the park, you know, it's a park for a reason, and I think it's pretty much the crown jewel of Colorado. So, you know, the park itself, and then, you know, if you want to hike, the Bear Lake area is real nice. It's spectacular. It's really the nicest. The parking lot is kind of high, so you get a good start. You don't have to climb so high to get to some of the high lakes. And but consequently, it's really crowded in that area. So you got to expect some crowds, but the scenery is just phenomenal. And then if you don't like the crowds, you can go over to Wild Basin and hike in there. And then, you know, I would say everybody should at least drive over Trail Ridge Road. That's the longest continuous highway in the United States, or the highest continuous highway. It goes over the mountain and goes down the other side, and it goes up to 12,200 and more than that even, I think. And, drive Trail Ridge at least. You know, and you know, people that don't want to hike, they ought to drive Trail Ridge. And there's also Fall River Road. That's pretty spectacular, too. But they don't open that until about July 4th.
You know, I've been going out there for a while, and I remember going up Fall River Road when it was two-way. And for the
Are you
folks,
serious?
A while,
I am serious. I am serious. And it's a combination of switchbacks and gravel, not much asphalt involved with it at all. But
yeah, it's all gravel.
And it gets spectacular. There's a mountain range there called the Mummy Range that you basically just go along the foot of the Mummy Range. And I can still recall as a youngster looking up there, we'd always go at twilight up Fall River, and you could see, the wildlife is spectacular. You looked up on those cliffs along Mount Chapin and Mummy Mountain, see the bighorn up there, and of course on the left, if you look in those meadows, that as you're approaching the tundra, you watch for elk. It's just absolutely spectacular country. But I think one of the most thrilling things that I've ever seen in that park is we were going up Trail Ridge. I love to go up that road at night because you can't see anything, but you don't know what's going to run out in front of your car. I mean, because that's when the animals are moving. And it wasn't quite dark, but when we were just almost to tree line, Cheryl was with me. I think it was our first trip, and a bobcat tore across that road right in front of her car, and we may have seen it for, I'm thinking, seemed like a short time, maybe 2 to 5 seconds. In fact, it didn't slow down a little bit till it was actually in the middle of the road, so you could see what it was. And I told her, I says, you're pretty lucky because there's people that's lived in these mountains their entire lives and have never seen a bobcat. But the place is just spectacular. I mean, every time of the day, it's got a different look to it, the colors of the mountains.
And I think that's what calls people like, you know, Sandy and I back is just, you know, we've been, I guess, 13 or 14 years, sometimes two or three times a year, and it's always changing. You can do the same hike every time you're up there and see something different and more spectacular every time up there. It's just, it's like it needs to be on your bucket list. Before everybody dies, you need to go to the park once.
Absolutely. And it's a photographer's dream. I mean, even I don't consider myself a photographer per se. I love to take photographs, but I don't think I've gotten out there less. Now, of course, now it's digital, but in the old days you'd buy rolls of film. 15, 16 rolls of film was no problem. Every time you look,
right.
There's a picture.
And oh, then he's
you
got
get
pictures.
Back, and they all suck.
That's why we went. Yeah, that's why we went digital. Western Photo was getting rich off of us, so go digital. And Sandy looks and deletes or looks and keeps. So,
right.
And one of the.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, Sandy. Sandy started off. I mean, that's how her love of photography began with us being up. We started off at the point and shoot, and it was like, well, this. It's hard to do it justice with any camera, but so it evolved, and and she's trying to make a living at it now. So
she takes spectacular photos.
Well, God provides. There's some beautiful scenery up there. It's easy to do. So it's and one of the things is when you have somebody like Ed that can show you the things that if you're the normal tourist and you don't really get to get off the trail. You go with Ed, and we still have to do. Excuse me, we still have to do the Glacier Knobs thing. But Ed just knows the park. I mean, you get to see things that you only wished you could see. So I'm envious of him in that.
Oh, absolutely. What do you think of the future Rocky Mountain? What's the big changes that you're seeing, Ed?
Oh, excuse me, an increase in usage. And the park is spending a lot more money on improvements, the road, and now they're going to improve the road from the Bear Lake Shuttle parking lot down to the beginning of the road. Like, they did the second half of the road first, and now they're going to do the other half. And I was talking to one of the workers, and I was told that they're going to reroute the road even for 1 mile where it goes along the river right after Hollowell Park. Because so many people are going down to the river that it's causing enough erosion that the river is pretty much dying.
Oh.
So they're going to move the road away from that river there in a mile stretch of it. And I imagine they'll restore where the road is at right now to, to its natural thing. I guess they're cataloging all the trees and stuff. They're pulling trees and saving them. They're going to put them into where the road is going to be, hidden. The old road will be, so they'll hide that. They'll plant all that vegetation over there that they take off of the other road. And I talked to them on the first road, when they fixed up the higher part of the road, and they went along the road and they cataloged all the plants and the percentages of this plant and that plant. And then when they came back, they sprayed that percentage back on. They got that spray mix with that green stuff in it, They put that on there and the same percentage in the areas that it was in, like probably every 100 foot or so was an area. And they all also grew plants in greenhouses.
Yeah.
And like perennials and stuff like that, stuff that is hard to start. And they brought the plants out of the greenhouses and put those in. And well, that road now, that's been done about 4 years, 5 years. And if you look at, the landscaping alongside of it, you'd think it was done 80 years ago.
Really?
Yes. They did a beautiful job. It cost an arm and a leg, I know, but it's a beautiful job. So they're going to redo the whole road, coming in, and it should wind up being about the same. And it's a little bit better road. They don't really make it much wider except, like, the switchbacks so that they have it so two buses can pass. And I think that's one of their goals, too, is to have a bus.
How's the pine beetle? Is that kind of leveled off?
Well, it's just starting to show, maybe, Bill. It takes a while for the needles to turn brown in the spring.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I really don't know yet. Ask me in another few weeks, probably.
Well, the pine beetle, for our listeners, it's a beetle that's been attacking the pine trees out there, and I really don't know if they have actually realized what the future of that's going to be, but it's could be very destructive. We're just hoping for the best. It's been a pleasure. This week we've had on Igloo Ed from magnificent Colorado. Sucker, he gets a chance to go to Rocky Mountain National Park every week, and I'm so jealous. That's my favorite place in the whole world. And Ed, as always, we'd like to have you back on again in the next few weeks, find out the latest activities going out there in beautiful Rocky Mountain. Also, a big thank you from San Antonio, Texas, to join in on the conversation. And add quite a bit, Bill Powers. Bill, man, I really appreciate you calling in, and I know you told me earlier that you're going to give Ed a hard time, but you were fairly lenient on him tonight, so I know.
I'm real. I'm relying on him to save my life here in about another month and a half, so
yeah,
I'll ride him.
I'd be kissing his butt, too.
That's what we're going for, right?
We'd also like to thank Henry May down in Mississippi for his expertise on manning the phone lines and the chat lines, and always a great job. And, of course, Doctor, great job on the Wild World News.
Great show tonight.
Oh, it was. It was outstanding. We'll see you next week, everybody. Remember, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Larry Batson. This is Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.